Good afternoon, I'm Roger Watterson with an election special this week for Douglas South. Last week we met the candidates contesting the Douglas North constituency, and today we'll meet those seeking the Douglas South seat. The vacancies in the House of Keys have come about by the election of two members from the Keys to the Legislative Council. In the case of Douglas South, it was David Cretney, a long-serving member for the constituency, leaving one of the two seats vacant. Douglas South includes the Pulrose, Spring Valley, Hillside Avenue, Annacare, local authority housing estates, and residential areas at Ballafton, Farm Hill, around the old Castletown Road and parts of South Douglas. Also in the constituency are the National Sports Centre, the Douglas Golf Club, and the industrial areas along Peel Road. At the general election, the turnout was 57.55%, the highest of the four Douglas constituencies, but low by comparison to other parts of the island. Polling day is next Thursday, the 21st of May, and this will be the last time that voting will take place in this constituency as it is. The boundaries will have changed for the general election a year in September. There are four candidates contesting this seat for a 14-month term of office. That's the life of this Parliament before it's dissolved in July 2016. The election will be the following September. Our candidates, and to start the discussion, as is on all election specials, I shall invite these candidates in alphabetical order to speak to us uninterrupted for 2 minutes on any subject of their choice. So on that basis, first of all, I will introduce the candidates and then I will call on them one by one. They are businessman Kurt Buchholz, registered nurse and charity service manager Liberal Vannin's Keith Fitton, and electrical engineer, businessman and Douglas councillor Bill Mullarkey. Now, all three are here with me in the studio this afternoon for live discussion. Homemaker Amy Burns, the fourth candidate, could not be with us due to a prior commitment off Ireland. Right, well, let's start to meet our candidates. And to start off with, I will first of all go to Kurt Buchholz, who in alphabetical order as we deal with them. Kurt, would you like to talk to us for 2 minutes, please?
Yes, I would love to do that, Roger. This week we have elections. So how should you decide? Most of you applied once for a job. You applied believing that you would match the criteria and you would be convincing during your job interview. That is what I will try to do in 2 minutes. I worked in top management positions and made a number of candidate interviews with people who wanted to work for me. For senior management positions, it was not only important how qualified the candidate was. It was equally important that the candidate had a track record proving that he had the skills they all promised they would have. Let me tell you a bit about myself. I was born 1954. Went to school in Germany, studied at the university in Hamburg and have a degree in economics. I also made my officer's license in Hamburg and had a successful maritime career, first as an officer, then for a number of years as a captain. About 20 years ago, I came the first time to the Isle of Man where I met my wife. In 2001, I moved here, married my wife Amanda, née Costain, and in 2010, our beautiful daughter Millie was born. Since over 16 years, I work for multinational companies in senior management positions as a director and managing director. I work with 35 global offices with up to 23,000 people. In these positions, I traveled a lot around the world, visiting my offices to ensure that my policies and strategies were introduced and followed. As a commercial director, I was winning successfully new businesses in various countries around the world. I have expertise, competence, leadership skills, international management and commercial experience, and a long successful track record. If you think that my skills would help the Isle of Man economy to develop and to make the required management changes, I would appreciate if you put the power in the right hands on election day. I will not disappoint you.
That was Kurt Buchholz. Thank you, Kurt. Now, from Kurt, we go to Keith Fitton for his 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Keith Fitton, and I'm not a traditional politician. I've never had a burning desire to become elected to anything. My career has been based upon helping people, and more to the point, as far as possible, helping people to help themselves. I began my nurse training 30 years ago, qualifying in psychiatry. For the last 10 years, I've managed a charity that supports physically disabled people. It should be no surprise, then, that health and social care, and people generally, are what is important to me. Within the charity, I'm responsible for setting and ensuring we remain within our budget. We often say we're not for profit, but we're not for loss either. It's the charity money, and we need to spend it carefully, with minimum waste, to maximise the benefit for the people that we support. Having worked in the NHS, the private sector, and now for a charity, I firmly believe that the NHS and government generally can learn a lot from the culture within the charity sector. This is our money. It isn't endless. Spend it wisely. Like many of the people I've spoken to on the doorstep, I've been increasingly frustrated by the way we are governed. The block vote system has led to hugely wasteful vanity projects being nodded through, millions disappearing on Iris, the power station and the film fiasco, with secrecy and little accountability. This must change. Now, everyone from the poor to the middle earners are taking the brunt of the government's indirect taxes. These are really hurting people, forcing many of them into poverty and a reliance on food banks, choosing to eat or be warm. Oh, how we could do with those wasted millions now. LibVan are a team, a group of people working together with shared ideals. From our members to our elected representatives, together we are stronger than the individuals that form us. Standing together, we can change the way our government works for the betterment of everyone. We'll bring forward positive proposals for growing the economy and make the Isle of Man a place where the environment is right for business to thrive once more. A vote for Keith Fitton is a vote for a fairer society and the team that will make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Now, the next to speak to us is Bill Mullarkey.
Good afternoon, everybody. Well, who am I? My name is Bill Mullarkey. I'm electrical engineer, company director. I'm a former MHK for South Douglas from 2006 to 2011. And I'm currently a Douglas Town Councillor. I am Manx-born. I have three Manx-born daughters. And I have lived in South Douglas for over 20 years. What do I have to offer? I have over 8 years political experience, including in my time as an MHK in charge of social services, the prison, probation, and the drug and alcohol strategy. As my time in Douglas Town Council, I've sat on several committees, including chairing the recently renamed Douglas, and I always get this wrong, folks, Douglas recycling site. I also sit as deputy chair of the Standards Committee and deputy chair of the Environmental Committee. I have over 40 years experience in business and 63 years experience, life experience. So what can I offer you? Well, I can't offer you any miracles, any quick fixes. We have 16 months of the term left, only 14 months of Parliament left after this election next Thursday. So I'm not going to make wild promises that I know that I can't keep. What I can offer in the next 14, 16 months, with only 12 Timewell sittings left, I will be able to start work on day one. I'll be able to start work next Friday if elected, because I have the experience of Timewell, I have the experience of council, I have the experience of the House of Keys, and I know the standing orders, and I know how government works, how government ticks. This is going to be a difficult or strange 12 months from October onwards, because we're going into election year. Because we're going into election year, you're going to get some very, very strange people backing out of government, trying to win votes. Now, if elected, I will have the power and the backing of Douglas South, okay. And I will use that to my advantage.
All right, Bill. Well, thank you for that. Now, that was Bill Mullarkey. He was the third candidate to speak. The fourth, Amy Burns, could not be with us today. So now's the time to look at the topics raised by the candidates and their manifestos and explore some of the current political issues. But before we go into that, I just need to work out where everybody is coming from. Keith, Liberal Vannin candidate. Does that make any difference to the way you're going to tackle these issues now and perhaps our discussion this morning?
In the discussion? Mm. No, I'd have to say that I've not got any experience of this type of discussion. So there will be an element of fielding questions as they come. We don't have a three-line whip within LibVan. We've obviously got a team that have agreed a manifesto. But in general terms, what you hear from me is going to be what I believe in my opinion.
But you do have to do as you're told.
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at the two MHKs we've currently got, I can't imagine people telling Kate and Peter to do as they're told. I've joined LibVan because I've got shared ideals and shared values with them.
But you have signed a contract.
I will be signing contract, absolutely. I haven't done yet. But the contract is to ensure that there is openness and fairness. I'm not convinced it's actually legally binding, but it will be shared and it will be certainly morally binding. And I'm quite happy to share it. I'll give a copy to you to hold me to account.
Now, Bill Malarkey, you're a almost a very keen independent. You've stressed this on a number of occasions, but you were once a party man.
Yes, and I learnt my lesson, and I'm no longer a party man, and I don't believe party politics will work in the Isle of Man. I categorically state that. Mm-hmm. I cannot see much difference between the council of ministers and having a party, and they all have to toe the line, and they all have to crack the whip, and if you don't do it, you get sacked. And I think
Keith's shaking his head there.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is, Bill, you'll have our manifesto, our party, because I agree with you. Council of Ministers is a party. It's a de facto party that wasn't elected on a manifesto. You've got my manifesto now. I haven't got the Council of Ministers manifesto. The Council of Ministers is basically the Chief Minister's party.
Right. Now, in Germany, Kurt, party politics is quite complex. The idea of it here in the Isle of Man didn't appeal to you.
When I tried to get into politics, I looked at the parties that we have here, and I joined a number for a couple of months, actually, the Liberal Running Party. And before this election process started, I left the party because I thought the party is very unsuccessful on the Isle of Man, and it is not the right way to go forward. I think independent candidates here on the island, because it's so small, that's the right way to do. And what Keith said can't be right. If he says the people know what he gets because he has a manifesto as a party, we also have a manifesto. So when we tell the people what we are standing for, it's equally important.
Manifesto, your independent manifesto, you started by offering new policies for a better future in the Isle of Man. But going through the manifesto, it doesn't seem to contain much in the way of political policy or philosophy. What new are you offering?
Yeah. What I was referring to with this one, with new policies, is most probably the governance and the way how the government is operating. For me, the government, and this is what the government itself says, the Chief Minister said it 2 weeks ago, his strategy has failed. He mentioned why it has failed. He said the departments, and especially the planning departments, were not doing what had to be done. So it says clearly, it shows us clearly that it's a rift between the government and the departments. So when we want to get things right, we have to start from the basis, and that is to build a proper foundation for these policies here. You cannot build a house starting with a roof. So this, the foundation is not right, and Mr. Robert Shaw, who was one of the ministers who was responsible to build this proper foundation, he gave up in the end because he tried to do things and he didn't succeed. So there's a fundamental problem that we have in the government. That's what I meant with reform the policies.
And how would you be able to do that, particularly in such a short term of office?
You can't do this in 16 months. That's not possible. Mm. But you have to make a start. When people have a target or a vision where they want to get to, and they snip they think they can snip the finger and they go to the top of the mountain, that's not how it works. You have to have a lot of small steps to get to the target. And that's what we see here. A lot of small steps, getting the government departments right, the management structure, the management motivation, the motivation of the people. Is there any efficiency? How can it be trimmed in a better way?
Okay. That's how now, I see Bill, it. Your manifesto, one of your first lines, is to ensure that money is spent wisely. That was quite a platform for you. Fine words, though, but almost impossible, isn't it, to bring about right across government, especially with this departmental structure?
Well, with the departmental structure, unfortunately, Roger, we have silos within the departments. We have civil servants who are looking after their own part of the department, their own budgets. And I believe, and I always believe this, that these civil servants should be led stronger by the political members. That is what they're there to do. Unfortunately, if you have a weak political member, you find that the civil servant takes the political member down the road instead of the political member ruling on top of the civil servants. These little silos have got to stop, and the money that they're trying to protect in their own little departments has to be shared about and guided to a more effective place like health.
But you're battling against embedded systems and the culture. That is actually what the Chief Minister has been on about since the day he took office.
But my opinion, then, he hasn't got strong enough political members behind him driving forward and taking control. We are allowing civil servants to run this island instead of allowing our politicians to do it. And unless you have strong politicians who are prepared to stand up and be counted, you'll never change the system.
Yeah, but you did say also in this manifesto you never bow to political pressure, but politics is the art of compromise. Most effective one is a politician who knows that.
A politician should be able to sit and listen to an argument and give his own argument forward and come up with a positive decision built on fact. Mm. I'm not saying here that everything in my manifesto I can go out and achieve. I can't. I know that I'm only one person. But if somebody comes to me with a good argument as to why we should do something, I will listen and I will make a calculated and decision on whether that's the right direction to be going at, because I'm there to represent the people.
Well, now, Keith, you say quite early on in your manifesto that a lot of people are frustrated by our current system of politics. Now, can you justify that?
Well, yes. I mean, before I do, if I could just step back to something that Kurt mentioned, because he's kind of flipped past the fact that he was actually interviewed to be a Lib Van candidate for this by-election and wasn't selected, and actually spoke at the open meeting, still in support of Liberal Vanin, and then just 2 days later resigned from the party and announced he was an independent candidate.
But isn't that what somebody with their own mind in politics is entitled to do?
Absolutely, but it seems like a very quick decision from 2 days earlier supporting the party system to then 2 days later actually declaring as an independent.
Well,
so I just think that's something that the,
well, maybe it is, but here we are now
need to be aware
with
of.
You as
yep.
a Liberal Vanin yep. candidate and these two gentlemen
yep.
are not.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So on that yep. basis, I say, let's come back to that question. Mm-hmm. It is a platform of yours. A lot of people are frustrated. Isn't yep. it just scaremongering?
No, it's not. I've been round. I started campaigning almost 4 weeks ago, and I've practically been with my team to every registered property on the island, in the constituency. So I've spoken to an awful lot of people. And I've spoken to a lot of people who are feeling disenfranchised. They're feeling that they don't actually want to vote for anybody. They feel that it doesn't make any difference if they do. They feel that when they elect people, they get in and put their feet under the table and lose sight of their own manifesto. They become part of the Council of Ministers. And I'm having that conversation repeatedly, quite genuinely. That is a conversation that's coming out time and time again.
So what's the alternative, or what's the option?
Well, like I said, I do believe that we need a party that says this is what we're going to do, and I'm saying this is what I'm going to do
as part
of that
party. But the party can only say that if it has some sort of majority.
Absolutely, and I think it would be disingenuous not to say that we are already planning for 2016, because that's when we can make a difference. There are some independents within the House who I admire, and I think that they are good candidates as independents, the likes of somebody like Chris Thomas, for example. So there are other people that we can work with who are outside of the party. In fact, I'll work with anybody if it's for the betterment of the island. But it will be with the core values in place, and they're the ones I share with other people in the party.
Well, let's just finish off that point by manifestos. Mm. Bring back politics to the people. That's a leftover catchphrase from the last election. I mean, that's just a bit of spin to catch a cheap vote, isn't it?
Or it is something that we believe in and we still believe in and we're still trying to achieve.
Well, isn't politics with the people? They're going to vote for you next week, this week.
I
you hope.
I know when there's a general election coming up, because candidates come and knock on my door and I don't see them again for another 5 years. Liberal Vanin holds a party meeting every month on the second Wednesday of every month, and it's open to non-members. Anyone can attend. The MHKs are there, so you've got direct access to your MHKs. You know where they'll be, and if I'm elected, I'll be there and I'll welcome people coming and challenging my views.
What, can I say something, Roger? Mm. I think there's a fundamental error here. When the two MHKs, Kate Beecroft and Peter Caron, say, you can visit us, but in a party, people do not want to join a party meeting. They would like to talk to their representatives. I think that is a wrong way of doing that.
You've been to those meetings. You know that they're attended by non-members as well. A non-member can attend that meeting as well. Anybody can attend.
No, I'm sorry.
But people surely do when they want to talk to that MHK. They don't want to do it through a party structure. They sometimes want
exactly,
to privately
yeah.
go to
that's
his house and talk to him about a confidential issue.
And people do.
And that's why it is not working.
You don't have to speak in front of everybody. What I'm saying is, you know,
okay.
it's the closest we've got to having surgeries on the island, because in the UK they have political surgeries.
I think it's an interesting situation to be sitting here at the moment with we have Keith sitting here in between Kurt and myself. Mm. And Kurt, obviously I'm an ex-Liberal Vanin and I saw the light. Kurt is obviously going to join the party and saw the light. When you look at the history of the Liberal Vanin party that was set up in 2006, it's lost 50% of its MHK since 2006.
Well, let's move on from party politics now. Because
I think it has to be said. Because
yeah, indeed.
Liberal Vanin has lost 90% of its commissioners and councillors.
Okay, but let's deal with the situation as we have in front of us today, because the public are faced with one Liberal Vanin and two independents. And that's
three independents. The public
sorry,
faced with
three independents. Yes, there's two here today. So let's just go on to something else, Kurt, for you. You stress quite a lot in your manifesto, and I'm quoting here, connections to the Isle of Man by air and sea need to be reliable, affordable, and in the interests of the Isle of Man. Now, there is always a debate about the cost of travel in general terms, but don't the present services fit the bill in normal circumstances? We have a pretty reliable sea service, and although we can argue about the planes, they still fly.
Yeah, I think we have to look at two different things. One is the airport with the flight. So we have open sky policies. Airlines can apply for landing rights here, and they do this, and we have various connections. Now, I know that people try to nail me down and say you are a one-trick pony with a shipping interest. But let me say something about the steam packet. I think they do a brilliant job. And I'm not saying this now to sound cheeky. They do a brilliant job for the shareholders. The steam packet is doing exactly what they're asked to do according to the user agreement. They provide a certain number of connections. They provide the amount of people they have to transport from side to side. They're most of the time on time. When we look out of the window, bad weather can delay the ships, but that has nothing to do with the performance of the company. The downfall of this connection is the site how the contract was made by the Isle of Man government. So if we would have an advantage for the Isle of Man, that would be a different thing, but we don't have that. So Steam Packet is doing a perfect job for their shareholders, and they do exactly what they are allowed to do as per the user agreement. What I was saying all the time, and I have to correct that people all the time when they try to say, Kurt, you have some different interest. My only interest with this shipping connection is any kind of renewal of the contract has to go through a public and open tender process.
Are you suggesting it still stays as a monopoly or not?
Yeah, it's absolutely a monopoly. There's no question about that.
Yet you say you advocate two user agreements, and therefore that implies two companies.
Yes. I have the steam packet has, because of the user agreement, the obligation to connect Ireland. And they do it once a week to Belfast and once a week to Dublin, as far as I know, and that's during the summer season. the rest of the time, they don't go there. And Mr. Woodward, the managing director, made a statement and said it's not really something where they like to go because it's not profitable. Now, there might be an interest from other shipping companies to offer that line. It could go through an open tender process as well, and then we would see if there's an interest or not. Anybody who says there's no interest, there's not enough cargo, they have to prove me wrong when I say no, that's not true.
But Southern Ireland, you say, is where a lot of cheap goods can be found, or cheaper goods.
Building material comes from Southern Ireland. A lot of goods that we are using here on the island are coming actually from Ireland.
Okay. Now, Bill, you feature the steam packet as well, because you go on to say that the Banco Espirito Santo, which is the prime owner of it these days, a Portuguese bank, profits are going off the island and things must change. How can they change?
I think they can change greatly. And firstly, can I kill the myth that everybody thinks I want to nationalise the steam packet and I want government to run it? No, I don't.
Company must be under the control of Manx people, you're saying.
Okay, so let's take it to simplistic. Kurt, competition will not work in Douglas Harbour. It's been proved time and time again. We go back to the 80s when we had Manx Line, which was the start of the user agreement that got us to the position that we are in now. Unfortunately, the user agreement is now used as a commodity on the stock exchange. Right? Mm-hmm. After 2002 extension of the user agreement, the company was sold for £200 million.
But the value of the company was substantially the value of that
of the user agreement,
which was being amortised over the years.
It was the value of the extension of the user agreement. Now, the user agreement is due to run out in 10 years' time.
So now, at the moment, it's its lowest value. Then.
And every year we go forward, it's going to get to its lowest value. Mm. Now, we have, and this is what I don't want people to think, I want to rush out and buy the company. We have in our reserves, and let's not get into what the reserves are made up for, £1.4 billion. We give them reserves to responsible people to invest for us, to give us return for our money, for our investments, for our profits on our reserves. My view would be that we bought the controlling interest in the steam packet and we took the profit. Not a foreign bank. It's a very profitable company. As long as there's only one operating.
So you're not suggesting that government runs the steam packet?
Absolutely not. It's a PLC. You cannot have a government member on a PLC.
Well, there's an assumption, therefore, that the shares will be for sale.
We hold the ace card because we hold the user agreement. Mm. So if they want to go and sell that company to anybody else, they're selling it on a decreasing scale. This is the time to act.
Indeed it is, but what happens if they don't? I mean, the shares, there are only the shares on the market.
Well, if they don't, Roger, in 10 years' time, we'll be able to buy, we could either order some new vessels or we'll be able to buy the shares or the vessels that are left.
Right. So when the...
the company will have no value.
So what you're saying is it's about...
Open negotiations is what I'm saying.
We sold 14% of our shareholding some years ago.
We did indeed.
So what does the Liberal Vannon Party make of all this?
I don't think there's a set view, so this is my personal view rather than a party mm-hmm. view. I broadly agree with Bill, in actual fact, although I don't agree that now is the time to act, other than to say that the user agreement will not be renewed in its current format, which would actually devalue it that little bit quicker.
Exactly.
But I think we could actually be looking to purchase a golden share and a controlling share in a few years' time, probably in about another 5-6 years' time. Clearly, any announcement we make now is going to ensure that they don't invest in new vessels. I think we've got to be very careful what we wish for. I think an open seas policy would be an absolute failure for the reasons Bill has stated. However, we've also got to be careful. At the moment, there are a number of scapegoated areas within our community, and the steam packet is one of those. I would be very concerned about any other alternative company coming in that, for example, paid International Transport Federation rates, which is possibly one of the ways that an alternative company would try and keep costs down. And I know that I think it's Stena who operates Ireland. They pay less than national minimum wage legally because they use ITF rates. So we need to be very careful that we don't end up making something worse for ourselves. But yes, in broad terms, it's a company that makes £7 million a year profit. We need to actually be looking at trying to keep some of that £7 million on the island.
And I'm glad you're agreeing with me, Keith. But what worries me at the moment, the steam packet company or the shareholders are looking for an extension on this user agreement now. This must not happen. What concerns me even more is, and this is no disrespect to any ministers or anybody in the DOI, but it's the DOI who are dealing with this. This is a national issue. Now, if elected, the first thing I would ask for is a select committee that has the power of the highest court in the land, Tynwald, to look into the future of the shipping of the Isle of Man, to look into the user agreement,
Hasn't that all been done? You served on one.
I served on two committees, but we are going back 5 years ago now. We're now getting a situation. 5 years ago, they didn't come to us looking for an extension on the user agreement. They are now. 5 years ago, we didn't go out for other expressions of interest.
Do you agree with that, Kurt, that any discussion, negotiations on the use agreement should be suspended or put on hold for the time being?
No, I think we see the right steps of the government. They have asked for expression of interest. A number of companies have put their interest in.
Couldn't that put the steam packet out of business?
Possibly. The steam packet has the same rights like everybody else, and they put their interest in as well. I'm sure, I mean, we haven't heard which companies were this, but I can tell you that I got the government in contact with a German ferry company, which has 35 ferries, 10 times the number of passengers and 10 times the number of cars. They are very interested to take over the service. They have the similar service in Gibraltar, in North Africa, in Sweden, in Germany, and in Denmark. So they are very interested to come here. So all the companies have the same basis to start in this tender process. If the steam packet gives the best offer, they would win. But it should not be given, or a contract should not be given away behind closed doors. It has to be in an open tender process. And that's what I always say. And it's not that I want to open the market to all shipping companies. It should be one company, because you might be right that if we have four companies, they might kill each other.
I'm not disagreeing with what you say, Kurt, but can I ask you a question? Who would you like to see looking into that? Would you like to see a select committee look into that? Or would you like a department who's had three ministers in 3 years who can't make their mind up which scheme they want for the promenade, and we're letting them decide who's going to run our port? We need a select committee to look into this, not a department, not one minister who might change next week or fall out because he's electioneering. I don't know. I want a select committee. This is an important part of what
can I answer that in plain English in one sentence? We need an independent body that decides this kind of things, and not that should not be decided by people who could give a favour to somebody. So politicians, I mean. Right. So you have to have an independent body. That's also for the OFT. That's for the judicial system that we have here. It all has to be controlled by independent people.
Would you support that any company coming here would not use International Transport Federation rates and would actually be paying good, proper wages to the crews.
Now, Keith, you're going on a very dangerous party because you do not know what you're talking about. If we're talking about ITF rates, you look at the steam packet. The steam packet has two ships. One is the ship that we see in the harbour here, the fast craft. The fast craft has, in the summer, people on board who are not paid Manx rates, and they are not paid the same rates like on the Ben McCree. They pay a different rate, and they're all not from here. So, and that is more close to ITF rates. Now, ITF rates is internationally accepted.
So you would pay below minimum wage.
Why would I pay that? Why do you say I would pay
minimum wage? I asked you the question. You didn't say yes or no.
You know, the company. It's up to the company.
Is ITF below national minimum wage? Yes or no?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. So would you do you think that is morally correct to be paying our crews below national minimum wage?
You know, it has nothing to do with morals. It has something to do with international agreements.
No, it's got everything to do with morals. That's all part of good governance.
What does that have to do with morals if the ITF negotiates a wage scale?
Because the steam packet doesn't use ITF rates, and that was agreed with the government.
Okay, well,
I rest my case. Let's stay with the steam packet, something we know that served down for 185 years.
And it works.
Right, and just take a little bit more control of it.
Exactly.
It works well. As the main shareholder, at the shareholders' meeting, you can cap profits, you can make sure that the profits are reinvested into the company again, you can have fares brought down, you can have new shipping stock. You can do that if you're the main stock shareholder in the company.
Right. Now, I think we have to take a short break now. But we'll return to our debate in 2 minutes with more from the candidates in the House of Keys by-election for Douglas South.
Call the UPVC Windows Specialists, Phoenix Windows, for quality windows, doors and conservatories along with fascias, soffits, varnish boards, guttering and all building work undertaken. With free estimates, free surveys, guaranteed work and all-island coverage. Phoenix Windows don't use standard off-the-shelf frames. Their windows are made to measure, which means you get a perfect fit, less bulky frames and more glazing. Call 816628 or visit phoenixwindows-iom.com.
If your knowledge of the Manx language extends to
Toy as person blain rush,
take a listen with fresh ears.
Mother my kistow, Tammy Brow dis allow. Mother my kistow, Tammy Brow dis allow.
The living language of the people of Man.
Ask about your lifetime warranty on new Prestivo tyres. Yes, lifetime warranty.
Auto Solutions, 670-145. Millie Chaps of Ramsey.
It's that time of year when you might have family or friends staying over. Millie Chaps have a wide range of single and double fold-up beds, along with guest beds, pillows and bedding. So for an extra bed in seconds, visit Millie Chaps of Ramsey today.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Millie Chaps of Ramsey.
Bill Mullarkey, Keith Fitton, Amy Burns and Kurt Buchholz are the candidates in the House of Keys by-election for Douglas South, brought about by the election of David Cretney to the Legislative Council. The voting takes place on Thursday, the 21st of this month, and the polling stations are the Key District and St George's District will be in St Matthew's Church Hall, Pull Rose is in the Pull Rose Church Hall, and Annika at the Annika Primary School, and School of Allegheal, Ballylafton, where the count will take place. Now, with me in the studio, by the way, all these stations are open from 8 in the morning to 8 in the evening. With me in the studio today are three of those candidates for this election special programme. They're Messrs Mullarkey, Fitton and Buchholz, and Amy Burns was unable to attend. Well, let's move on, gentlemen, from the steam packet and perhaps go to something that's in your manifesto, Keith. It says the basic pension is sufficient, this is what you want to ensure, is sufficient to provide an acceptable standard of living. Well, that sounds like a very fine ambition, but under the financial circumstances of our pension system at the moment, isn't it possible?
It's got to be made possible. I don't think there should be any discussion about it. It should be something that anybody.
So where's
who's
the money
got
coming from?
Well, we've got to find the money, even if it's still hitting reserves for a little while longer. We have a situation at the moment where, you know, the government proudly says they're going to protect the vulnerable, but I don't think they even know who the vulnerable are. We have no definition of fuel poverty on the island, and we apparently can't use the UK's version of fuel poverty or definition of fuel poverty because the island is different. Okay, we accept that. In that case, we need to be devising an island-based fuel poverty. I think it's an absolute embarrassment and a disgrace that the biggest growth industry at the moment seems to be food banks. You know, this is not acceptable in a society.
I'm trying to
like
get
ours.
At what would be your policy. I mean, it's all really well to say something should be done, but we have to find out what. It has to be a bit more than just a wish list.
Yeah, we have to prioritise spending, and I think prioritising spending to ensure that people have, you know, that our pensioners actually have a decent retirement is one of those things. That should be a priority spending. Like I mentioned before, that there are people being scapegoated,
right, okay,
and pensioners seem to be one of the scapegoat areas.
Faced with this, what would you do, Kurt?
I think the fundamental approach is wrong here again. We can see that. Keith tried to distribute money that we do not know if we have that. So what we have to do first is we have to look at the budget. A lot of politicians running around at the moment saying we have balanced the budget. Nobody knows if we have balanced the budget. Even Mr. Tia does not know when the money runs out. He says for the social welfare fund, and he says it runs out in 30 years, then it comes another figure 15 years, then comes another figure 20 years.
The actuarials have been doing this,
so,
haven't they?
What we have to first figure out, how much money do we have? When anybody who understands how a budget is made for a bigger organization, and I think, Keith, you haven't done this, but it would help to understand how a budget which is made for a government, where there are hundreds of positions coming in, where you make a budget forecast and you have an actual budget every month, and then you have a corrected budget. So basically, you're working with three budgets.
When you charities when do that, Kurt.
Yeah, but not on that level.
No, well, charities so, do that. So yeah,
and
like
so that is one thing. And then you have to see what kind of contracts does the Isle of Man have with anything for investment, for with the steam packet, and you have to see how much money comes in. There's a prediction, and when the predictions are wrong, either about the cost or about the profits or the money that comes in, then the whole budget is wrong. So we have to establish what the reality is, because I do not think that the budget that we are told is the right budget. If
so
you ever made a budget for a big organization,
so your morals are quite happy to keep pensioners unable to afford to eat or choosing to eat or heat.
I didn't hear me saying anything.
Well,
that
was Roger's question.
Yeah, to you.
No, I don't know quite. I said, how would he deal with the fact that you want to put the pensions up in effect?
Yeah, that's not the question.
Yeah,
that Kurt
I said we cannot say how much money we want to allocate to a certain position or to a certain issue, because we do not know how much money is there. First, we have to make the basics right, the foundation, which I said at the start of this meeting, and then we know how much money we can distribute. You start distributing the money without knowing how much money we have.
Do you agree then, Bill, that there is an issue with pensions like this? Well, I mean, which do you accept there? Do you accept the fact that more has to go out, or do you accept the fact that there is a question over the way the figures are provided?
I was more confused as to whether we were talking about pensions or income. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, last year there was £30 million deficit in our pension, and this has to be addressed. And this has to be addressed by, unfortunately, people working longer, contributing more, so that, you know, we can see beyond the next 40 years going forward.
Well, this is the pay-as-you-go system, isn't it? I mean, there's no fund really there. It's today's payments paid for yesterday's
exactly.
pensions.
Exactly. So
yes.
Unfortunately, for mismanagement or for not acting quick enough, I would say, that our young generation are going to end up paying
generations.
Well, we have to... I'm sorry, people are going to have to retire later. They're going to have to work a little bit longer. We're all going to have to do it.
Isn't that what it's going to happen?
Well, it's going to have to happen. But the problem is, Roger, we've been talking about it happening. We've had so many reports for the last 5 years, I can remember, and we're not getting any further with it.
Keith, in his manifesto, has said that, I quote, the basic pension is... It makes sure the basic pension is sufficient to provide an acceptable standard of living. I'm not sure what that definition means.
That's very hard. I mean, obviously we have a supplement, and certainly a supplement for the Isle of Man is very, very important, because the cost of living on the island is greater than that of the UK.
Now, we've been talking there, we need to move on, unfortunately, in these programmes quite quickly, because we're talking there about people who are on pensions. But at the other end of the scale, and you introduced it slightly there, Bill, there's the young people. Now, Douglas South has a significant number of young voters. Previous elections and their campaigns have not attracted a great deal of interest from them or created any enthusiasm in most of them. What would you say you have to offer the young, Bill?
Well, that's a very good question. I've always been a great supporter of what we're doing within our education system. I'm a great supporter of the new nunnery IT. I'm a great supporter of the new engineering plant up at the college. We need to make sure that our next generation are fit and able to cope with everything life throws at them, because life is becoming tougher and tougher out there. Jobs are becoming tougher and tougher. So we've got to make sure that we are giving the education to these people so that they can fill the jobs in on the island. I would like to see more of it done, encouraging them to come
indeed
back to the island.
Well, and I think Kurt's manifesto and the Liberal Venice is something similar, but the question there was, how are you going to get them out to vote?
Well, I'm getting quite a good response on the doorstep. Remember, most of these voters, a lot of them are at university. Mm. A lot of them are at university at the moment. But the response I'm getting and talking to people is, yes, they're thinking about it, but it's up to us as politicians to sell it to them on the doorstep, to encourage them.
Do you think you're selling it to them, Kurt?
I can only refer to a sentence I said before. The politicians have to start to talk in plain English so that the people understand what you want. And you have to explain to the people also what you want to do, and then you have to try to convince them. And that is what we are lacking here. Politicians talking a lot. They can talk for 20 minutes, and later on you sit down and you say, what has he actually said? That is a problem we all know. I have seen that for 60 years, or let's say maybe 50 years, because I'm only 61. So this is something that is very, very important. You have to motivate the young people, and they are fed up with the way how politicians are
how
talking
do you know
and what
that?
They do. I think it starts by building up trust. It's not something that you can switch on like a light switch. It's something that has to build up, and it starts in the schools where the young children have to understand that they have to do something for the country. And I can only quote this, what John F. Kennedy has said during his inaugural speech in 1961. Ask not what this country can do for you, but what you can do for this country. And that is something that we have to tell the young children.
Now, what about your situation, Keith? I mean, you're beating the bailiwick like everybody else. Are you finding a reaction from young people, or are they indifferent to it all?
No, I mean, I was smiling to myself while we were talking, and I was thinking of a couple of weeks ago. I was out with Peter Caron, and we bumped into a young lady on Lennox Park, and I said to her, "Do you vote?" and introduced myself, and she said no. She said she's not even registered to vote. And I sort of smiled and said, "Well, you really should, and get interested in it, because otherwise it's old fogies like me and Peter who are deciding your future." I'd actually like to see us become a bit more imaginative. I'd like to see us have requisition meetings held in the schools so that children can actually talk with us and ask questions.
I think we need to engage. The last two elections, that's happened at Ballycommon School. We've had that.
But we can keep doing
that. What's happened in the middle?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's happened since. We should be having politicians going into the schools and into the college. All of us, so it's not about party politics or individual politicians, it's about all of us explaining how the system works and why it's important for those people to become engaged with us.
Now, would you say, Bill, that in government, a lot of the peripheries of government, the boards and other types of non-departmental activities, they have some mind of their own? Because Kurt in his manifesto says, I quote, "The judicial system needs to be politically independent." Now, would you say that...
I'd like Kurt to expand on that.
No, but I mean, I'm asking you really from your experience. Well, what's your view of that?
I mean, there can be far too many boards and too many talking shops, right? And not enough action. That's a definite thing I found last time. And in fact, that was starting to thin out when I was in government last time. You're spending more time going to meetings and talking shops than actually getting on and doing the job. So, yes, Lena Keene... Government general includes boards.
I think Kurt's thing was he didn't say that. He said judicial system and, incidentally, the Office of Fair Trading needs to be politically independent. Now, both of those don't usually come into the firing range in election. The Office of Fair Trading doesn't come onto the radar hardly at all. And the judicial system. I mean, what's the reason for that, Kurt?
The reason for that is that the I had a meeting with the Office of Fair Trading, and what I understood from the director of the Office of Fair Trading is that whatever kind of investigation they initiate, they have to ask first the Council of Ministers if this can be released. And that can't be right, because the Office of Fair Trading might in some cases investigate about against the people in the government. So they have to be independent. We have a lot of boards and departments which look very nice, but they don't work because they are controlled in the wrong way.
But the Office of Fair Trading, this is a five-man board and three are members of the public.
Yeah, still. They made an investigation about the price of the steam packet, and that just to come one more time back to the company, which I think we shouldn't, but they had the task, the Office of Fair Trading had the task to find out what the price levels was. Then they did it, and the Council of Ministers refused them to
publish. The
Select
Committee did exactly the thing far more efficiently and far quicker. Yeah.
So, but this is not a personal campaign, then?
What?
The Office of Fair Trading. It's come in on your manifesto quite clearly, but is this a personal axe you have to grind?
No, it's they have to be independent. Same like when we have a tender process, it has to be open. An open tender process. It has nothing to do with me. It's just that I found out what how these people are working. They should be independent. They should
As Roger says, they are two political members against three public members. You must have political representation. If you're going to change law or change legislation, you need to know what's going on. You need to know what's not right. Yeah. And you need them political members to take that back to the Council of Ministers, to Timwald, so you can put things right.
What about you?
Yeah, again, unfortunately, finding myself siding with Bill.
Do you want to join my party?
Yeah, I was going to say. it is a political position, and the people elect the politicians to do that kind of business. Now, there are times when I would suspect that sitting down and actually doing a cost-benefit analysis of some of the meetings that they do and work out how much people are on every hourly rate suggests that we could get rid of some of them. And possibly using the OFT as the example, what would be better is actually that they sharpen their teeth rather than get disbanded.
It's this independent of government phrase which has caught my eye, not the operations of
it. Yeah, no, I think it is. It's a government body. It has to have government representation, and the government is representing the people, and that's what we need to accept that. So
now we've been talking in the main about what I would think would call domestic matters. Now, whilst I appreciate international and constitutional matters don't usually attract much in the way of votes, nevertheless, when elected, whichever one of you it is, you'll be a member of a national parliament. Where, Kurt, do you see the Isle of Man being on the international stage in the coming years?
I think we have to position ourselves again because of the developments in the UK. We're very close to Europe. Europe is a powerhouse for the industry worldwide. And we have to make sure that we are not disconnected in case the UK disconnects itself. And the recent elections in the UK lead into a certain direction. Mr. Cameron will very much look after the interest of England or the UK, and not so much after any interest of Scotland, Wales or the Isle of Man. So we have to look after our own interest, and that means connections to Europe, that we don't lose that.
Okay, quickly,
please. I would agree. We need to be looking at maintaining connections to Europe. It's of concern that the UK may leave. We need to look wider as well. I mean, I had no problem with the fact that the Chief Minister went to China. In fact, if anything, my only problem is he needed to be going more often.
And Bill?
Well, I agree with both gentlemen, but what gets me on this island is we have a wealth of entrepreneurs on this island, either working or retired, and we do not use their experience enough. We do need to bring them together to help us move forward, okay. And their contacts.
Now, I'm going to ask each of you in one sentence, we're so short on time, to tell me, and I'll start with you, Bill, why should the voters in South Douglas invest their one and only vote in you?
I will say it again, I'm an experienced politician, experienced businessman. I can start work on day one. There's only 16 months of this term left.
Keith?
Okay, I'm not a traditional politician. I'm here for the people. My career's been about trying to support and help people. And I think the only way we can get change is through the party system of Live Van.
And Kurt?
Yeah, I think we have to make the Isle of Man fit for the future first. It starts in various levels, and that's, I think, what we have to do, and possibly bring different people into politics.
Right, well, we're at the end of this edition of Election Special, in which we met three out of the four candidates in the forthcoming by-election for the one House of Keys seat in the Douglas South constituency, brought about by the election of sitting member David Cretney to the Legislative Council. They were Independents Kurt Buchholz, Bill Malarkey, and Liberal Vannin's Keith Fitton. Amy Burns was unable to attend. And if you missed part of this programme or would like to hear it again, it's available on the Manx Radio website in two places, the Listen Again section and also in the By-election 2015 section. Today's programme was produced by Catherine Nicol, and I'm Roger Watterson.